Today on the AF Podcast, I'm joined by Sasha Raff family members, Randall Walter, head coach of Team XL's prep program, as we break down part one of our selection for the NBA awards, the Lou Will situation, and some NBA bubble talk. Then on the back half of this episode, I'm joined by Roger Callender as we discuss the potential disaster of the NFL season, the Washington football team's name change to the Washington football team, plus a lot more. Sasha Raff is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows with Sasha Raff Radio. Hit the like button repeatedly or hit every single one of the 5 stars to support me in what I do. Especially when it costs you $3.99 to show me love. I appreciate you. And to also catch up on my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. Before we begin, the coronavirus pandemic has shut down a multitude of events this year, which includes Carabana Weekend, which will be on as we speak right now. Can we have a moment of silence for Carabana Weekend? Let's have a moment of silence. You thought I was joking. I'm in a real moment of silence. Oh, hold on. So all of us is hurting. I mean, I should either be walking into a jam or heading out of a fete, depending on when you're listening to this. And it literally could be any time. So in light of that, myself and DJ Chris Nice will be presenting the Zoom edition of our annual Sunday afternoon carnival barbecue party. You can DM me on Instagram at Calceum, that's CalceeEM, as well as South Shore Ave. And you can also hit me at CalC on Facebook. Represent your flag, your country, show off your outfit, share our drinks virtually. Let's try to, and let's have some fun. It all goes down at 4 p.m. I can't wait to see you. And also, this podcast was recorded right before, and you'll be able to hear that in just a moment. It was recorded right before the NBA restart, the 2 games that happened basically last night. They were good games. I missed most of the Pelicans and Jazz one, but I definitely caught the Lakers and Clippers. That was very entertaining for the first game, you know, the first night back. Come on, Kawhi, you got to take them shots on LeBron. You got to. I mean, this is what you wanted, right? Is this not what you wanted? Got to take them shots, man. But overall, it was a good game. You know, I can't wait to see them meet in the conference final. That's going to be very hella entertaining, especially when everybody's hopefully healthy during that time. But, you know, we're going to talk more basketball as the summer progresses into fall and the playoffs begin. We'll get into all of it here, but it was definitely a good game. It was definitely a good game. They had no answer for Anthony Davis at all, which is expected because he can't be stopped and the Clippers don't have anybody to stop him. But it's going to be interesting to see them meet in a 7-game series, though. I still pick the Clippers, but like I said, again, this is a great restart, a really good restart, I should say. Maybe not great, but it was a good restart. Anyways, let's start this podcast. It's the AF Podcast with Cal C. on South Shore Ave Radio. Booming down, sunken in like Lou Will. 6 men like Lou Will. 2 girls and they get along like I'm Lou Will.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast. I got the South Shore Ave family member, head coach of Team XL's AAU basketball program, which will be hitting as soon as this everything clears from stage 3, stage 4 of this pandemic or whichever happens. And he's also the CEO. He's still holding resident of the CEO Team Lightskin. Give it up for Randall Walter. How you doing today, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me back on the pod. Mm-hmm. It's not AAU. It's prep, man.
Prep.
I'm on another one now, man. And you could kind of, I want to shout out you play Canada. You know what I mean? That's UIBL, Dan Washington. Shout out to that crew. Officially part of that family as well now. So, you know, moving up like Wheezy.
Okay.
You're
moving from the Hot Boys to, oh no, you mean like the Wheezy. You mean Wheezy.
Yeah, yeah.
Wheezy. Okay.
Georgia Wheezy.
George Jefferson. You're walking with your hands falling back.
You got that, brother.
My bad. With this NBA bubble, the restart starting as of literally right now, as of this recording, I think it's like the first quarter of the Jazz and the Pelicans, you know, and I'm sure Randall's going to give us ooh and ahs a little bit every time when we're watching this. But, I don't have the TV in front of me right now, so I'm going to have to get to it as soon as this pod is done. But
yep.
With everything happening, with the restart, with the bubble, with the next eight games to control seeding of the playoff rosters and everything else is going to be happening, I want to start things off with Lou Williams. So regarding this whole Lou Williams situation, him leaving the bubble, him going to Magic City, the gentleman strip club out in Atlanta. what are your thoughts on the controversy of everything that happened out of that?
Well, you know what? This is such a we're in treacherous waters right now. Like, we're trying to navigate through these COVID-19 waters, and you kind of need a compass. And the compass right now is the bubble. If you don't follow the compass, you're just going to get lost, right? And you're going to get others in trouble and jeopardy. And I get it. It's not easy to conform and to especially, it's like jail almost, right? You can't go outside the bubbles, all these regulations. But at the same time, that's the profession. You get paid millions and millions of dollars to play, on a high stage, and this is your profession, and this is your craft, and this is the dedication, and this is the commitment you have to do, not just to yourself, but now to others, because it's a safety risk, right? Yeah. So, he should be quarantined for X amount of time if he breaks the law. Yeah, we all would love to go to Magic City and do your thing, but that's irrelevant at this point, right? Mm-hmm. At this point, everybody is abiding by the rules, and it seems like it's going well so far. And this is just for the love of the game. This right now is—I shouldn't say for the love of the game. It's for the reputation of the game, I should say. But yeah, overall, I mean, I think Silver has handled this. You know, he always handles things very well, and I think he's handled this even better. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's handled this whole bubble. Them, I mean, the NBA, Adam Silver, the NBAPA, they've handled everything as best as possible regarding this whole bubble situation. Regarding Lou Williams, I mean, see, I guess it goes back to the perspective of whether you believe his story that he went to go get wings, because the whole issue is I don't think the actual club, like in terms of the actual service that they provide, I don't think that portion of it is open. Like, it's not open. Like, they don't have strippers in the strip club, as far as I know. I mean, I could be wrong, but as far as I know, they don't have strippers in the club. It's just they're just actually having food. So
listen, see.
Let me tell you something. And I see some pictures. I see some of the pictures, and it wasn't packed, and there wasn't.
I got a side face on right now. I got a side. Who the hell goes to a strip club without strippers to get wings? First of all, who the hell would want to go to a strip club to get wings? Well, even if they had good wings.
Randall, hold on. First of all, you've been to the South. You know how them strip clubs is in the South.
I don't care. I don't care if it's the dirty South. I don't care if it's the nasty North. I don't care if it's the Wild West. And I definitely don't care if it's dirty ass New York City. I am not going to no strip club to eat food.
Yeah, and you know what? And that's your prerogative. That's fine. I'm not even
that's my prerogative.
Listen, I'm not even saying like I've been to the strip clubs in Atlanta and stuff. So I can't even speak, but. Just from everybody that we know that's been a part of those establishments or spent money in those establishments.
Hold on. But you've been to one in Miami.
Yes, I have.
And did you have food there?
No, I did not. But it wasn't. I mean, I wasn't hungry either. I wasn't something that I was looking to go do. But in case in point, number one, like to explain to some people who don't know how the strip club scene is in the South, as we both can attest to, it's a different life out there. It ain't like the taboo situation where, you know, you go to the strip club, you don't go with your wife. Like, you can go to the strip club in the South with your wife. You can go there to go eat. You can go there to go club. And you can go there to of course, you know, take part in the service that they provide. Right?
So, but I'm saying, I guess what I'm alluding to is more is, when you go to the gentleman's establishment, you're not necessarily going there for the wings. You're going there for the eye candy, right? So there's other places he could have went
to get
food.
Now let me ask you, if you went back home in that situation, would you go to if it was an Applebee's, would you be okay with if it was an Applebee's, or would you go to a strip club where the food or the meal is actually named after Randall Walter?
Okay, now you're, if the food's named after me, that's different.
Exactly.
but first of all, if you want to look at this kind of from a different perspective, he shouldn't have left anyways. He could have had someone bring the wings to him. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he had to leave, he could get someone to go get him wings.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the overall thing is the optics look bad.
Because
as far as, you know, the interview that I heard him say, he was like, you know, they're providing, you know, they're considered an essential service because they're not open to the strip club scene. They're still serving food. So they're providing an essential service. Now, mind you, because of the optics. Mind you, again, whoever he took the picture with, that's on, they're an a-hole, because like at some point, like somebody in this team or himself has to be like, yo, don't take pictures. I know you're my man and everything, but don't take pictures of this.
Uh-huh.
You know, just to be smart. Because you got to quarantine anyway when you come back. And especially if you're getting tested outside the bubble, you're going to get quarantined anyway. So don't make it worse by posting pictures like you out there partying and stuff, because now it's a whole shitstorm that comes along with it. You know, but like I don't think it's as big as a situation, only for that fact, and just because you know how the strip club scene is in the South. If it was like the strip clubs that was here or wherever else, now it's a whole different story. But because you know how it is in the South, don't get me wrong, it's still a bad look, but it's not as bad as like it's perceived to be, only in that sense. But you're right, he could have got somebody else to pick up his wings.
You better got someone else to pick up his wings.
Especially if you're going for a funeral, just stay low key and just go back to the bubble.
You know what I
mean? Now, I brought you here as well to talk about, we're breaking up the NBA awards into three parts, right? So today we're going to discuss the coach of the year and the most improved player sections of it. And then I'm going to end it off by getting your dark horse bubble team that you think might actually make it to the finals or win it. But we'll save that for the end. So let's start off with Coach of the Year, Coach Randall. In terms of your pick right now, before we even get into your pick, I'll give you some of the nominees that I think there are some nominees for the Coach of the Year. So you got coaches like Taylor Jenkins, who, you know, the coach of the Grizzlies to an 8 seed. And I think at this point of the season, I think is actually borderline amazing, because that's such a young squad. Nobody's expecting them to be where they were, to the point that you had guys like Dylan Brooks calling out Iggy for not joining the team, if you remember that back in the winter. Like, you had Ja Morant be like, he was such a catalyst in getting his team to the next level. But the development of Jaren Jackson Jr. giving good minutes to Brooks, like, to me, I still think it's unfathomable that he dropped in the second round. You had Brandon Clark that was balling. You made room for Jonas to ball. And then you just had a whole culture, that whole me against the world culture, like, that's been set to me, which is also amazing to see. So coming from your first year, depending on how you look at things, they were not expected to do anything, really. This is kind of like a rebuilding year. And the fact that, like, I think they actually have a good chance to hold on to that 8 seed, you know, even under the circumstances. I think it's a great thing. What do you think about like an option for Taylor Jenkins?
No, you know what? I think it's a viable option. But with that being said, I mean, look, like, there was a point that Dwayne Casey, like, and I know there's a lot of people listening to this podcast that are not good big fans of Dwayne, and I've never been that hard on Dwayne. But listen, the, you know, Nick Nurse last year had a great season. Everyone put it on Kawhi Leonard's shoulders instead of, you know, giving him credit where credit's due.
Don't pick your coach of the year yet at the end of the season.
No. All I'm saying is that, like, I think he's definitely, like, you have every right to put him in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, there's him. There's, you know, there's a lot. I'm not going to name off all the coaches right now, but I'll let you kind of, not going to steal any of your thunder, but I think you have every right to nominate him, but I don't see him as the winner right now.
Okay.
Not as coaches of the year typically aren't the AC, even if they pull off miracles.
True. Okay. Fair enough. And then you also got Eric Spoelstra. I mean, you know, you know how it is, Miami Mafia. You had your cousin Joel Anthony playing for them, so we can attest to that.
Yeah.
The Riley picking up Jimmy Butler was probably the perfect quintessential Heat player because, as everybody knows, the situation with the Timberwolves and everything that he was complaining about in terms of Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns not playing hard, like there's no team that plays harder that fosters that culture more than the Miami Heat. You know what I mean? In terms of how they work out, how their training camps are, just how their regimen is all the way around, all year round. Like they do not play. You know, that's not something they play with. And that's, to me, that was like the perfect player for that situation. But going back to the coaching aspect, the way that they gave a role to Bam Adebayo, who was basically like borderline amazing this season, scooping up Tyler Herro, giving him minutes, giving him proper development, but also giving a chance to Duncan Robinson. He's been one of the best three-point shooters in the league this season. You know,
shout out to Duncan Robinson, all my GDA grads out there.
And then you gave the opportunity for Derrick Jones to come in and ball. Like, he was just known as a dunker. He still is for the most part, but he's been playing better. And then we can't forget about Kendrick Dunn, who came out, shocked people right off the jump. I think he's a high nominee for Rookie of the Year. They're fourth in the East, but in this bubble atmosphere, they're a true dark horse. So I don't know what your thoughts about Eric Spoelstra is, but...
Well, Spoelstra is the type of coach to me that could always be on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that he's a winner of it? No. No, I don't think he is. I think he's done a great job last year and this year to keep, you know, and I think he'll continue improving. I agree with all the sentiments you said. I think that, you know, the team itself, you know, I give a lot of credit to you, Rouse, for finding the right type of dogs to create the type of team that he wants for the South Beach vibe. And I think that, you know, he'll continue to build on that, and they'll get the certain type of players will want to go with Miami, regardless if it's Miami or not. So, yeah, I mean, you know, he's definitely done a great job. He's a great coach. He has a great mentor. But I still don't think he's coach of the year.
Now, with that said, like, I've always thought he's a good coach, and this is the prime example of having loyalty and support behind you, because most situations where Spoelstra was, especially when the situation started with the Big Three 10 years ago, most coaches wouldn't have survived that, especially when they struggled early. Some franchises, like when you saw that with the Lakers back in like 2013, when Mike Brown was a coach, and after like 5 to 10 games, they got rid of his ass when they were struggling. Most people, especially with public pressure and everything, they panic and they get rid of the guy. But Riley stuck to his guns. Like, he knew what he had, and he stuck to his guns. And look, the Big Three era is over. A whole new generation of Miami ballers are coming through. They got cap space in 2021. It's still Miami. I mean, you know, even though the pandemic is, you know, the numbers are going up, but it's still Miami. And look, like, he's still there. He's still riding with him. He's 8 to 10 years later. He's probably one of the longest running tenures of the league. Like, he's still there.
Sure.
He's still there.
You know what? When you have someone like Riley as your mentor and in your corner, you know, you're always. It's not like he did his thing, but like it helps, right?
Yeah. No, it definitely helps. It helps when you have that support. And then the other nominee, I would say, is Frank Vogel. He's a good coach. Listen, I mean, I got to give him respect in the sense that they're the only team in the NBA that's top five in both offense and defense. And I give him credit for that. Their record as well as a defense. But I'm not 100% sure sometimes where LeBron James ends and great coaching begins. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm with you.
And to lend to what we were saying before with Coach Spo, Coach Spo is the only one that was able to ride through the LeBron James phenomenon, because you think about every coach that's coached for him, either they've been fired right after he's left that team, or they got fired during the time that he was there. Nobody's ever progressed with them and still continued to coach for that same team. The only one is Coach Spo. Everybody else bounces after that. You know, I want to give him props, and I do, but I'm like, at the same time, I don't know where LeBron James ends and Frank Vogel's coaching begins. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But he is a candidate because they got the best record in the West. You know what I mean? They got Anthony Davis, so that helps as well, too. You got two of the top five players in the NBA on the same roster. You're going to win games. But I don't know.
Those are your nominees?
Well, no. I got another one, but that's the third one so far.
Okay. And then, yeah, I wouldn't put him on my list.
No?
Frankly. Okay. No.
So and then as a coach, we got Nick Nurse.
But before you go on, Nick Nurse, I'll let you talk on that. Sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But you're missing like the coach, the one coach that will probably that might win it.
Who do you think that would be?
Boonehauser.
Boonehauser? Okay.
Boonehauser, sorry. Okay. Boonehauser is one of the top two or three candidates right now.
Mm-hmm. I haven't forgotten him, but go on. Like, state your case.
You'll state my case. Everyone could say Giannis. But over the last couple of years, coaching is not just about having good players. It's about having a good system to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. So, especially through the regular season, right? And that's essentially what he's done. He's done it over the last two, three years. Mm-hmm. His record has gotten better. And now he's solidified himself as a top-tier team in the East with the top-tier player that he helped develop to get there. Because, you know, once Budenholzer got there, he took them to another level, and you got to give credit where credit's due, man. They were, before this pandemic, they were rolling like on all cylinders, right?
Absolutely.
Firing on all cylinders. So for me, when you look at the top team overall, like, you have to look at the coaching, and he's by far has shown that in all categories, not just in the win-loss column, retaining players, creating a culture. I mean, this guy, the only thing that's missing on their resume is a championship.
Yeah, and I think, like, I have him as, like, I guess one of my five candidates, but I think the only reason why I don't necessarily have him winning per se is strictly because of the fact of where they were before. I mean, they were the number one team in the league last year. They had a lot of the same accolades last year, and I mean, they're riding on that this year. Don't get me wrong; like, they're the best team in the league so far right now, and you know, and Giannis definitely improved from his MVP season last year. But there's some things that he's done really well, like their defense. They're the number one defensive team in the league, and like I mentioned in the last podcast, once you see them in person, they're huge, you know. And he takes advantage of all of it in terms of the players that he has on the roster. Making guys like Brook Lopez not just stay, like last year, like he had Brook Lopez out in the three-point line all the time. This year, when teams switch and put the smaller guy on Brook, they're making Brook go back to being the old Brook Lopez, where he's getting points in the paint again. And they've been taking advantage of that a lot, which is like a wrinkle, but that's like it's a pretty serious wrinkle, especially come playoff time, if they continue to switch and put a 6'6" guy on him, and now, you know, you have a guy that, you know, he was an all-star at one point and giving you 20 a night, you know, in the post. So, I mean, those are certain wrinkles for that. I mean, going into the season, we thought they were going to be the number one team in the East, and losing Brogdon was going
to
be.
What's that a tribute to? See, what all those adjustments you just talked about? What's that a tribute?
I was coaching, absolutely. Like, that's
how I give back down.
I give him his props. I give him his props for that. But like I said, for me personally, I don't have him as that, and I'll get to Nick Nurse, which is, you know, the other candidate, because of all the injuries that the guys had experienced on the team, plus losing Kawhi and losing Danny Green. You replace him with Rondae, Hollis Jefferson, and Terrence Davis, those two players, yet you still have the second best defense in the league. The core of your team in terms of Kyle Lowry, Serge, Van Vliet, Gasol, Powell. They've missed a combined 81 games this season, and yet you still had them on pace to have a better record, regular season record, than they did last year. And then we're not even going to get into the whole thing of, well, we could, but if you want to, but like the whole factor of his coaching in terms of how they play defense, the schemes they run, especially defensively, like the way he coaches his team is kind of like death by a thousand cuts. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much different guys that can hurt you on this team. I mean, Pascal has been their top player, but there's so much guys that's equally contributing to cut you on your ankle, on the back of your knee, on your chest, on your shoulder. You know, Lowry's been playing amazing. Like, the whole Terrence Davis has been, like, to me, he's on the all rookie team, if you ask me. I know he didn't make the rookie game this All-Star weekend, but to me, like, he's been a hell of a surprise. Chris Boucher has been playing like that. It's hard to deny Coach Nurse everything that's happened with him this season, but considering what you had guys that weren't even expecting him to make the playoffs, the Raptors making the playoffs. We did. We had them as our top three team, but most people barely had them making the playoffs. You know, but go on. Let me hear what you have to say about Nick Nurse.
No, I'm 1,000%. Like, everything you said, I'm echoing. I mean, Nick Nurse, I already ate my words on this. I was not a huge fan at the beginning of last season with Nick Nurse. Mm-hmm. I was not a huge fan. But now, as a coach, in retrospect, you know what is crazy? He already, when you have a team and you know how good they are, and you know all the nuances that a coach can do with the team, and you're like, look, man, I know I'm going to make it to the playoffs with this squad. I know I'm not worried if I'm number one, two, or three, because I know I'm top team. I'm worried about championship. When you have that mentality as a coach, it's like Popovich, right? Like, he already knew, so he was trying all types of adjustments, not worrying about the win and loss column, doing dumb stuff at the beginning of the season because he was testing out things. I didn't know that. I would think as a new coach, you want to come out the back shining and winning and showing how good you are. He was setting us everyone up, so by the time the playoff comes, he knew what to do and when to do it. And when I saw later in the season how he switched, his lineup switched, it was more secure, his method switched, and were more secure, and you saw, like, I finally understood, like, the picture was finally painted, I was like, God damn, this guy's a genius. Mm-hmm. He's a coach. He's a real coach. And you know what? I learned a lot from him. I went to a seminar and learned a lot from him. And I had to eat my words because I was not a big Nick Nurse fan. Look, people think I'm crazy. I really like Dwayne Casey. I don't care what anybody says. I thought he was a – I'm not going to say he was an all-world coach.
No, he's a good coach.
He's a good coach. People – a little chased him out of town. Little, he's not that good. No, he was a decent coach. Now, people could criticize me for saying that, whatever. But I'm telling you right now, Nick Nurse, you can't compare them. That look, I don't know if Masai got lucky or was a stroke of genius. I don't know which one it is. Or if he just got a horseshoe up his ass and just keeps making the right moves at the right times. But like, I'll tell you right now, Nick Nurse definitely, in my eyes, deserves Coach of the Year award. He deserved it last year, and he deserved it, and now he's solidified it this year. You're right. He's created a system a la Detroit, you know, Pistons, early 2000s, Chauncey Billups and all that crew. You know, the next man steps up any given day, it's anyone's fight, right? And it's like a band of brothers, man. Like, they're going out there, and yeah, Pascal's the show pony, but like all these other players have stepped up their game to fill the void of what Kawhi left. Like, all their points have went up. Even like Norman Powell, I know he won't be on anyone's list as most improved player, mm-hmm. but for me on the Raptors team, he's definitely the most improved player. Him and Serge Ibaka, mm-hmm. just phenomenal. That, you know, the type of schemes they run for them, the type of confidence he instills in them. Like, I remember, I think I told you this on one of our podcasts, that shout out to Coach Eddie Jones, Edson Jones from Excel. He trains a lot of professionals, and I walked in the gym, saw him training Norm Powell before the season started. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think I told you this. Like, I looked at Edson. I mean, he looks good. He goes, yo, Edson trains all Mike Brogdon, all types of pros. Like, you know, Thon Maker, all these guys. And Dellavedova, he goes, Randall, I'm telling you this right now, coach. He goes, he has the best shot I've trained so far of any leaguer. That's a huge statement. Huge. Of all the pros he trains, he said that. He goes, like, he has the best shot I've seen so far of any pro I've trained. Yeah. And I don't know if this is just a period, if it's just this practice, this time I'm training him, but I'm just in awe. And it was the first time I ever trained him.
But you look at it from the perspective of not just that. You're coming off a summer of being an NBA champion. You got a chip on your shoulder as well because your team's counting you out.
It's the confidence that he has in the players, and it's the culture that you create with your team to go forward. Like I said, like I Dwayne Casey was good at the time with the whole pound the rock and moving the ball forward, right? To he was getting a couple of first downs there. And you know, Nick Nurse just brought across the goal line and got the touchdown. It's just that is what it is. It's like Steve Kerr when we went to Golden State. Like, yeah, like, you know, everyone's pissed when what's his name got, you know, they kind of let go of
Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson. Mm-hmm. But when Kerr came, he took the team across the finish line. So that's what Nurse did, and Nurse definitely deserves a Coach of the Year award.
And you know what? To lend to that point, with Casey, you know how it is, and this is in the case with all sports. There's some coaches that could take a struggling team or a mediocre team or a bad team and make them good, but then there's some coaches that you need to take them from good to great. Now we weren't expecting that from Nick Nurse, nor were we expecting that from Steve Kerr when he took over the team 5 years ago in Golden State, but. I mean, the proof is kind of in the pudding because they both won championships, right? Like you can never take away that process of them winning a ring. And with Casey, you saw like the kind of the writing was on that wall after that Cleveland series 2 years ago. It was like either you have to break up DeMar and Kyle, or one of them has to be traded, or you keep them both, or you get rid of the coach. We weren't expecting DeMar and Casey to be gone, but you knew a shakeup had to happen. You know what I mean? You knew a shakeup had to happen. And I think with some coaches, they can take you to like that good level. You know what I mean? Take you close to that level. But then at some point, it's like they kind of run out of steam. And it's like to bring the Raptors back the way they were, you know, the following year after that series, I think people would have been somersaulting off the bandwagon at that point because they knew how the year was going to end. You know, so this was like a fresh thing. I mean, everything worked out the way it did, you know, to case in point, because Nick Nurse is my coach of the year, too. Just everything that he's done this season. I mean, again, Randall, I enjoyed this Raptors season more than I did last year. Like, honestly, like at least the regular season, not the playoffs, but the regular season, I enjoyed it more than I did last year. I loved watching them play this year. I loved watching them play. It was amazing.
Not just with you, it's with a lot of people.
Sorry?
I said that comment is echoed with a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's move on to the most improved player category. So I'm going to list just to give you a list of some of the names that at least I think is a good nominee for the most improved award. Some people have Pascal Siakam, but I mean, I guess you could put him. That's fine. We'll put him in that category. Although I don't think he really needs to be, because I thought he would have been like I think the progression he made this year was natural, but maybe a little more than a natural progression, especially after Kawhi left. But you got Jaylen Brown, who averaged 20 points a game this year. Devontae Graham on the Hornets, that gave you 18-7 in his second season, who was really good. Jason Tatum, he balled out this year. You got Kelly Oubre, who was doing this thing on Phoenix this year. I had him on my fantasy team. He was actually pretty steady for the most part, because I always thought of him as this cocky hothead, but like he balled this year. He played nice. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I thought he's a really underrated category nominee for this category. Bam Adebayo, you got Brandon Ingram on the Pelicans, and you could put Luka Doncic in that category too. So before you pick your nominees, who's like some of the ones that you love, like in terms of most improved player going into this season?
I mean, I guess from the ones that you listed, I'll go bottom up.
And feel free to add some if you think I left some out.
So I mean Jalen Brown,
because Norman Powell was a good one, by the way.
Yeah, Norman Powell, but I wouldn't put him on the list. I'd say Jalen Brown right now. Mm-hmm. He's at the bottom of the list, but definitely, you know, should be mentioned as, you know, in the top whatever, you know, most improved players. I don't know if you mentioned Malcolm Brogdon. I loved him. That was a big loss for me for the Bucks.
Yep.
But I think he really had a great season. Shine. The one player that I think that you missed that I you know, he actually made an All Star was Trae Young.
Yeah.
I think he definitely.
Yeah, no, no, you got to give it to him, because I mean, he did average like 29. He did. Mm-hmm. He balled. He did.
Balled out.
The team was shitty as hell, and they lost Collins for like 25 games, 30 games with that suspension. But I mean, they still didn't do anything really. You know what I mean? So
yep.
But I mean, he did ball. But go on. Sorry, let me don't cut you.
You know, you talked about Shea. Shout out to you, Play. Shea had a phenomenal season. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone expected him. You know, he could be in the top three if he really wanted to push it. I don't know if he's the winner of it, but definitely Shea's up there. Bam Adebayo, you had him on your list. Definitely a contender. Devontae Graham. What do you think about him?
Oh, I thought he was nice this year. I didn't know who he was, to be honest with you. And I had to check
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
he played
nice this year.
Devontae Graham, yeah, he definitely was one player that you had to watch out for. I think at one point he was like the most sought-after guy on the fantasy block, right?
Oh, absolutely. I trust when he started,
definitely.
He had that first streak, and I thought it was fluke, and then the next couple weeks happened, and I was like, yo, let me take it. But then I saw I think somebody either drafted him or they scooped him up early. I was like, damn it.
I should have
grabbed him when I had the chance, but, you know.
He definitely is balled out. And Luka Doncic, I think he's up there because, like, that guy had a phenomenal season. Not only did he have, like, you know, a great, like, as his rookie season, but he had a better season this year and helped his team have a better record. So, to me, that's definitely in the works of – he might even be up there as on the low end of the poll of MVP. So
I think he's the top five in MVP candidate, to be honest with you.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So like,
absolutely.
But I definitely think he's in the top three of most improved. And the guy I'm watching him right now, and I had him lower, but the more I think about it, was Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
I think I had him for my fantasy this year. And he was just phenomenal. So, and then there's some dark horses, like you have, like I said on the Raptors, Serge Ibaka had a great comeback year, probably his best year in the league, coming off the bench as well. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely one of the most improved players on the Raptors, along with Norman Powell. So, yeah.
Okay.
But I'll give it to Brandon Ingram.
You give it to Brandon Ingram?
Yeah.
Okay. And reason? Like, why would you say, like, in terms of him?
What do you mean? He's the most improved player overall. I think from this year, from after his switch from the Lakers, I mean, his stats went up. He's helping at least, you know, New Orleans get to the a final seed of the you know, playoff spot. Mm. He's just become a better player, in my opinion, overall.
Well, I think with him, with Brandon Ingram, and I had him on my fantasy team too this year. He was definitely, yeah, like, I think he's a high candidate for sure. But I think part of it was two things. I think one is opportunity. I just think he got more opportunity to shine as opposed to where he was on the Lakers, especially when Zion went down for the amount of games that he went down for. It gave him a real opportunity. And don't get me wrong, he took advantage of it because he became an all-star. Was he an alternate all-star, or was he like picked as an all-star all-star? I can't remember.
I think he was an alternate.
Yeah, because that all-star game feels like it happened like a year and a half ago. But yeah, he did his thing with it for sure. He's definitely a solid player. He's definitely scratching the surface of his potential in terms of what he offered this season. I don't know how much further he was going to go because clearly, I mean, I'm not watching the game like you're watching the game, but clearly this is going to be Zion's team, and how he handles, you know, that is going to be, I guess, interesting, especially become, you know, the fact that he was kind of the replacement face of the franchise this season with Zion being hurt and making the All-Star team and everything. Like, I want to see how he deals with that. But, I mean, I like his game a lot. I think he's a good player. And we'll see what happens during these next eight games if they can catch up to the Grizzlies. But,
right.
Yeah, some of the players you named, too, like, yeah, I agree. Trae Young, you know, I guess I kind of looked at it with the losing being the factor of it, but he had some good numbers, man. I can't deny, and not just the scoring, but I can't deny some of the numbers that he had. My choice is, it came down to two guys for me. It came down to Gilgeous Alexander, because going into the season, just from my perspective, going into, you know, the season, I wasn't sure how much shine he was going to get with Chris Paul being there. And I wasn't sure how well they were going to do. I wasn't sure if it was going to be a disaster and Chris Paul going to want out and then the whole team just be a mess. And, you know, he would get some shine on a losing situation. But, I mean, you can't deny the record. I mean, a large part of it is Chris Paul, who's also kind of having kind of like a low-key MVP season as well. But Shai has been amazing, man. Like, I've been such a fan of his game. I love the fact that, like, nobody can speed him up. He plays his own pace. Like, I love that so much about him. And, like, the fact that he sees the floor, he sees everything. Everything he does is so – it's like, he plays a game at his own pace, and it's so smart, and it's so efficient. Like, I love where he took off this year. But if I had to choose, I think the guy I would actually choose for – most improved, can I say Bam?
Of course you can.
He definitely is up there.
Yeah, I think if I had to choose, I think it's really close between those two for me and him, for him and Shai. But I would actually choose him just because I didn't expect him to be that good offensively this season. He's a menace defensively, which we kind of knew where he was. We all kind of figured he was going to be headed that way at some point. Maybe not this quick. But we figured at some point he was gonna be like a presence defensively, for sure. You know, you definitely have the remnants of that even the last couple of years when you're watching him play. But I think offensively, some of the things he's been doing offensively, they actually run their offense through him, Miami, which I think is actually, I was not expecting that at all. The guy's averaging like 5 assists a game, which, again, blows my mind. And he's averaging also over a steal and over a block a game as well. I didn't see that coming from him. You know what I mean? So the fact that, like, we all expected Jimmy Butler to be Jimmy Butler, but I did not expect Bam to be that guy this year. I just did not see that happening.
You know, in retrospect, I would even say that, you know, now I'm thinking about it. I mean, Bam is up there. But I would say, you know, Brandon Ingram had a great year. Mm-hmm. But I would even say Luka Doncic could be my
Yeah, he definitely could, too. He definitely could.
Well, I'm thinking about it. The more and more – I'm being a little bit biased because I'm watching the game right now and I just love see what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, those are my top three: Bam, Luka, and Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, I did. I guess Doncic, because I mean, I kind of expected him to be. You know, the team is in his hands. So, but I guess you could have him. I can have him really high in that category too, because the guy, like, again, is, I think he's a top five or top four MVP candidate. You know, coming for that role from his second season, the guy's averaging 29-9-9. He can't deny that. You know what I mean? Even though they're and he's got the team in a playoff spot. So
yeah.
So you can't deny that. But with that said, I don't know. I think I was more blown away by what Shai did and was really blown away by what Bam did. I just did not expect that to happen. He's like, people don't talk about him enough this season, to be honest with you, man. Like, that guy's a presence, man, on that team when you watch their games.
Yeah, you're right.
And with that said, before we wrap up at least this first half of the podcast here, the last podcast, I've kind of mentioned my dark horse bubble team in terms of, I think I had the Toronto Raptors and the Pelicans. I forgot a team. I wish I can go back and you know, go hop in the time machine and go back and mention this other team. So mm-hmm. I'll allow you to say who your bubble team is first, and you might pick them. But I want you to give everybody who your dark horse bubble team is going to be in this situation. Who do you think that could make the finals or actually win it that's not like one of the top two seeds or the top three contending teams that everybody has on the list to possibly win it all, which is the Lakers.
Can I name two?
No. I mean, like, everybody has either the Lakers, the Bucks, or the Clippers as one of the three teams winning it all. So who would be your bubble team? Like, even, I mean, it could be, I guess, anybody, because I think this situation, it's set up in a way where it's almost like football. The lower seed team could actually come and get hot and win, right? It's kind of designed that way now, especially with no home court advantage and no fans. So, but with that said, I'll step back. Who do you think is your dark horse bubble team?
Well, in regards to the bubble, a team that could do any type of damage, I have two. So one is on the East Coast, definitely Miami. Yeah. Like, I'd be scared to play Miami because they can. I mean, realistically, the Raptors they're not a dark horse really, but they're a scary team to meet in the bubble. But I think Miami, just the way they play, they can catch lightning in the bottle and just terrorize people. Mm-hmm. And the second one is in between on the West Coast is in between now. It's either the Rockets. Mm-hmm. I think the Rockets, or I'm gonna stay with the Rockets. So those two other two teams that
Okay, which makes sense because you're not putting and I mentioned this in the last podcast too. You're not putting Westbrook in a situation where he's on the road having to make decisions in front of hostile fans, because I think the last few years he's made some boneheaded mistakes the last few years in the playoffs. And mm-hmm. A lot of it had to do with him being on the road as well as being his home, but like more so on the road where like the pressure is there and the crowd is on you. he can't handle his emotions too well in those situations. But like no fans, no road games. Harden has the rock most of the time. You have this spread out offense, no big men in the middle, so the whole floor is spread. You're taking advantage of mismatches, which he will be doing. I understand why you would have them for sure. I understand. I totally get it. So you think you would have them winning it all? Like as a dark horse.
I should say. I wouldn't put like all my money on it. I mean, there's other teams too that look good. I mean, there's Utah Jazz. There's a bunch of them that you kind of could sit back and say. Denver, I know they're a top seeded team, but they can terrorize people and go on a run. In the West, in the East, outside of the, I don't see Boston really winning it, so I wouldn't call them a dark horse. But the dark horse would definitely probably come out the West. But I'd like to hear what you have to say.
No, well, like I said, I mentioned before the last podcast, I had the Raptors and I had the Pelicans, but the team that I forgot to mention. I didn't think about this till after, I put it out and everything else. I totally forgot about the Trailblazers. Now, mind you, they have some ground to make up because I think they're like the 9th or the 10th seed. So if they're within 4 games of the Grizzlies by the time this 8 games is over, then they got those play-in games or what have you. But the reason
Nokic? Nokic is back.
I forgot Nokic and Collins. Yeah. I forgot those two guys were back.
They're back, and Nokic looks good.
Nokic looks
Nurkic
looks really good. Because that was the only Raptors game I saw them play, and if you saw that game, him and Serge had that little back and forth, and the next 5 minutes, man, he kind of punked Serge. So I was like, okay, this guy's looking good, man.
The refs pulled away at one point, but remember, Damian Lillard wasn't playing.
No, for sure. I'm not even talking about the result of the game. I'm just talking about that mano-a-mano thing for those few minutes. Like, Nurkic showed you, like, okay, like, I'm back. Like, don't think you're talking to a punk right now. Like, I'm back. And then with Collins, like, I totally – because those guys really and truly, they were supposed to be back. I think Nurkic was supposed to be back at the end of March. And I think Collins was supposed to be back, maybe a couple of weeks later in April, right before the playoffs. To run on that playoff push. This is before, obviously, everything, coronavirus came and hit everything up.
Yep.
But with that said, if they can make the playoffs, like if they make that 8 seed and they get through, man, that's not a team the Lakers want to face round one.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, they don't want to, because first of all, you don't even have the guards to guard Lillard and McCollum. Who's guarding those two guys, first of all?
No.
Like you don't want to deal with that. And then
well, Danny Green's there.
Sorry, go ahead.
You're right. They're gonna have a hard time. Sorry. I said they got Danny Green.
Yeah. No, and he's a good don't get me wrong, he's a really good defender, but I mean those guys are point guards, man. Like that's a whole different level. You know? And asking LeBron to guard Lillard and stuff, maybe in a couple of spots here and there, but to ask him to guard him for quarters on end, that's not gonna happen. You know, and then you got the bigs to kind of deal with, not to deal with Davis because nobody can stop Davis, but just those extra bodies out there. Collins is a solid player. Like, you got those extra bodies. I'm not saying the Lakers wouldn't win that series, but that's not a first-round team you want to face. You know what I mean? Like, that's like you rather face the Grizzlies. You rather face the Pelicans. You don't want to face Portland with everybody healthy, Carmelo there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's not a normal first round team that you're going to want to face eighth place team.
They've been riddled with injuries.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So this break has gotten everybody a chance to get healthy. So that's the scary part with them right now. That's what I
would. Yeah. Good call.
That's the one I forgot to like mention. But it's like I totally forgot Nurkic and Collins were back. I totally forgot they're healthy.
Good call.
Otherwise, I think I would actually replace them with my West pick for with the Pelicans. I'd actually replace them with that.
I still.
It's just the Pelicans schedule is so easy right now. But go
yeah.
on.
Pelicans schedule. Yeah, and I still kind of think, you know, Houston to me, I would stay with them only because it's the bubble, right? And because it's the bubble in the format that it's in. Their style of play, anything can happen, right? If they start shooting at a high clip for a minute, hot minute, yo, they're winning.
Yeah,
like you can't keep up with that style. You can't keep up with 3-3-3-3-3-3. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. if they start hitting them consistently, and I was watching them play the Raps, it seems like their D picked up a little better. It's gonna be tough, man. And then you got you always got people that can score and put the ball in the hoop, and that's tough, man. So I mean, the only thing is their lack of size, their unorthodox type of game may hurt them, but you never know. You never know.
And the one thing that I mean, and they lost Eric Gordon for the next 2 weeks because he rolled his ankle in that last scrimmage. But
see, there you go. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, which is going to hurt them a little bit. But I mean, he'll be back for the playoffs or what have you. So I mean, they'll be fine in that regard. I think the one thing that you will give them, even though they're short, like compared to like some of the bigger teams, obviously they're like a strong, thicker team. Like PJ Tucker is a thick boy. James Harden for everybody who always knocks James Harden defensively and rightfully so, but James Harden ain't a small guy. Like he's a thick guy too. You know what I mean? So and like I'm just saying, like Eric Gordon, strong, thick guy. Russell Westbrook, strong, thick guy. Like they got. Like the wing players that they have defending, like you're not gonna move them too easily. You know what I mean? Like they're pretty strong.
Yeah.
So that's the thing they have for them too. But I mean, I think they're a good dark horse for real. Like I'll give you that 100%. I think Dallas is another good one too. But just because of Luka and the things that he can do, and he's been in those situations before. But
yeah. I think they're one year away from being that perfect.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we're going to wrap up now. But I, first off, I want to tell you thank you for coming on the first half of this podcast.
No doubt.
Anytime, of course, it is South Sharaf family member. And also, we're going to be doing the Raptors post-game pods, once the playoffs start. So feel free to clear a little bit of time when those playoff games start.
Yes, sir. I'm the resident Raptor expert here, man.
So...
Jules is probably grinding his teeth right now.
He probably did. He just threw a shot glass against the TV screen when he said that. but with that said, we're gonna be. That's the annual thing we've been doing the last few years. So
yes, sir.
So you'll be back on for those ones for sure.
No, for sure.
But other than that, we gotta catch a drink before this. During this pandemic, man. So we gotta make that happen. We gotta try to meet up at some point.
Yes, sir. But I got to get a shout out to you. And normally this Sunday would be your annual rooftop event that's always popping. And my wife and I always love to go out and enjoy it. Not just the support, but we go out for the vibe. Got even to the point that even my pop, who's going to be 70, he's gonna be 77. Mm-hmm. He came out last year, and anytime he hits the city, you know he's dying. Mm-hmm. Like he came last year just to attend it. So I know you're gonna be having it virtually, the Walters will definitely be up in the house for
that. Thank you for that, sir. Yes, much support for that. And you know I love you, dear. Your dad is my family. Your dad is my blood.
We go back cradle to the grave, brother.
Cradle to the grave. You might not be blood, but you blood. Like, you know what I mean? It is what it is.
The one thing is, the only difference this year is that I can actually pop some English Harbor, you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? And, you know, all day we drinking and we don't need no chaser.
Eyes are drunk.
I'm a professional drinker.
So that was the first half of this episode. Thanks again to Randall for his contributions to this conversation and selecting his winners for Coach of the Year and Most Improved. The second half of this podcast, I'm bringing on another South Shiraz family member, Roger Callender, to talk about the NFL, the way they are protecting their players for the start of this season. And we also get into the way Washington decided to change their team name on their own with no pressure at all or anything. Yeah. It's the AV Podcast. All right, so let's start with the potential disaster that's going to essentially happen with the NFL and the fact that they haven't put anything in place to protect these players from the coronavirus. I kind of feel like this is going to be a disaster that's going to happen as far as, like, just in terms of, you're already dealing with the fact that fans won't be at the games, which is, you know, it's going to lose the league money and owners a lot of money. But just the fact that they don't have anything in place, Roger, that, like, just in case an outbreak occurs, is, to me, it's kind of mind-boggling. Like, you know what they remind me of? They kind of remind me of, like, a player that's running across the middle with his arms up, outstretched, like, ready to catch that ball.
Absolutely.
Only the coronavirus is just, and the controversy from the coronavirus is just waiting for him across the middle just to light him up.
Yep, like, absolutely.
That's why I feel like the NFL's in the position right now. They're ready to about to be decleated, like helmet flying, mouth guard flying, shoes flying, everything.
Yep, I can't agree with you more, man. I'm telling you. It just boggles my mind that a multi-billion-dollar industry literally has almost no rules to combat COVID. When you look at other leagues, when you look at Major League Baseball, when you look at basketball in particular, like they have rules specific all the way down to, like, you know, what towels, the towels that people use, the showers that they use, when and where they use the showers. I read an article today that's telling me that the NBA's the players have some sort of technology that they wear around their wrist, whereas if somebody comes within six feet of them for more than 6 seconds, it starts going off.
Yeah, it starts beeping.
Like, I mean, that's exactly what I expect from the NFL. What I don't expect from the NFL is literally days before training camp starts, they still haven't worked out an actual plan with the NFLPA. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. You think the fact that they would potentially lose millions and millions of dollars would spur them to get some sort of specialists or get some sort of doctors to come together and create some sort of cohesive plan. But at the end of the day, it doesn't seem like they care very much. And there's no planning. There's no foresight. If something happens, and something will happen because there will be an outbreak eventually, they literally are flying by the seat of their pants. They have no plan.
But here's a crazy thing. You know, all sports basically shut down, I think it was March 11th or March 13th, one of those days, one of those two dates, back in March, where basically the entire world of the sports world stopped, as well as the entire world kind of like shut down, right? So the NFL was out of the four major sports, the NFL was the only league that had like months and months to plan. NFL and the NBA, that's not NFL, NHL, sorry, and the NBA were mid-season. Baseball was about to start at the end of the month. But, like, everybody else was caught out there. But the NFL has had, like, basically 6 months. From the time that the league starts, they have essentially 6 months to put something together. The draft wasn't even part, like, the draft didn't even happen yet. The combine didn't even happen yet. I don't think the combine's happened by that time. I can't
remember. Not even, man. The combine's happened in what? It happened in June. No, actually, when did the combine happen? I think it was in June. I think mid to late June. So they had more than enough time.
Yeah. No, sorry. Not June. Sorry. The combine was either... Was it in February? I can't remember. I can't remember now when it was. But basically, point being, they had like a multiple time of months to put something in place. Now, it's hard because you got up to 1,500 players, not including coaches, staff, practice players. Like there's so much people that's involved in that. It's hard to put everybody in a bubble and to have like 30 football fields, or not 30, but like 10 to 15 football fields ready to go in each city. But my thing is, so I know that part isn't easy, like to try to get everybody in one place. But at the same time, though, you had so much time to plan. Like, look at what the NBA did. The NBA created a bubble in Orlando, Florida. Look at what the NHL did. The NHL created two hub cities in Toronto and Edmonton for the Eastern and Western Conference teams so that they could start playoff games. And, like, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen so far, but, I mean, it seems like everything's, like, they basically put everything in place as much as they could. You know what I mean? Yep. If something happens, you can't say that both of those leagues didn't try.
Like, absolutely.
Like, baseball, I still blame baseball a little bit, too, because you're kind of flying city to city. I thought maybe they should have had, like, maybe five or six places where the teams from, say, like, the AL East and the NL East just basically play in one area, you know what I mean? And then just do that for a few times. And then when the playoffs come, you know, you shrink down the bubbles more and more. Because you're only doing 60 games, but... I mean, I think that was a whole other story of trying to break the MLBPA and everything else. But the NFL, I mean, Roger, like, this is, I mean, you're already seeing guys pulling out. Like as of this recording, Damian Williams from the running back from Kansas City pulled out for the season.
Yep.
And you're already seeing guys in Miami, like, there's already an outbreak in the Dolphins locker room. You know, you got older coaches that's running around the sidelines. They're basically like, hey, you know what I mean? Like, we're all going to get it. Like, that's the expectation of the players, essentially. And I think Bruce Arians made the point, who's like, I think the oldest coach in the league. He's like, listen, we're all going to get it. We're all going to get it. But basically, we're trying to just stay away from each other as much as possible during practices and stuff. But he's like, you know, he's riding around in a cart, not really touching anybody. But he's like, they're basically all going to get it.
Exactly. It's scary. When you compare the NFL, especially the sport of the NFL, to other leagues, like, number one, the NFL probably has the most players, right? Each team, there's 32 teams. Each team on a regular roster has about 50 players. I think now they're going to expand it. I think they're expanding it to 65 or maybe 70. I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm. But they're expanding it because they're expecting people are going to get sick, right?
Right,
right then and there, that's about, what? That's a good amount of players. That's like 50, 60, that's roughly around 1,500, 1,600 players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at the type of sport it is, everybody's literally touching each other, or they're always touching something, whether it's the football, you know, whether it's each other as in tackling somebody or blocking somebody. You know, there's constant contact, more than probably any other sport aside from maybe like the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at the type of people that are actually playing it, you know, the old linemen are made out of guys that are technically 300 pounds, you know, huge guys, big guys, 6'4", 6'5", 300 pounds. Some of them are in really great shape. A lot of them aren't in necessarily the best shape because some of them play O-line, some of them play D-line, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
These players would be the most susceptible to COVID because of their health, also because of the sport they play. You would think that there would be more foresight by the to try and create some sort of safe space or a bubble or something in order to keep their players safe. All it takes is for one person to come down with COVID and spread to their teammates or spread it to, I don't know, you know, somebody from the opposing team. And all of a sudden, the NFL is going to be shut down. That's all it takes. It just takes one or two people. The fact that people are opting out, I think right now it's... You know, right now it's not that bad because there's only been, I think there was like five people from the Patriots, two people from the Chiefs, and I think one-offs here and there. But what I see is as things start progressing and people and they start training and, you know, as they start doing hitting drills and things along those lines and actually start playing, I'm suspecting that a lot of people are probably going to just bow out, because at the end of the day, they don't want to get their friends and family sick, and they're afraid for their own health. So, I mean, it just blows my mind. I mean, you would really think that the NFL would have a better plan. Like, I'm disappointed. I love the NFL, and I want to see them play. But on the same note, I don't want to see people get sick, and I don't want to see their family and loved ones get sick neither.
You know, just thinking of what you're saying here, you got to look at it from the perspective of none of these guys are, I mean, training camp is kind of like a situation where you can, you know, I guess you can best be in a bubble. I guess that would be the best scenario. But once training camp ends, there's no, like, none of the players are in a situation where they're all staying in one hotel for the next 3 months. They're all going home, right? So, like, that's like the biggest thing right there. Like, each and every one of them in their home city, they're just going home. So that, like, one of the things that they could have probably done is for the season to start, even if you're in the same city, like, you know, you're like, say, like, you're Tom Brady and these guys, you're in Tampa Bay. Yeah, I think what would be wise is for everybody just to probably be in one hotel or a couple of hotels, you know what I mean, and just be in that thing for 3 months. Like, I know that's really tough to ask because you got family members and stuff you gotta support or try to be around, but.
Right.
Like that, I mean, that serves some sort of protection where it's like, okay, maybe you can get excused like on a certain day to go see this family, but you got to go from point A to point B and that's it. Or maybe your family could stay there with you or in an adjoining room or adjoining hotel or what have you. But like, there's got to be something where it just seems like everything goes as normal, which I think is like when you're seeing everybody else make these changes, and I'm not even talking like the North American sports, you're seeing soccer overseas, like they're doing their physical distancing stuff and, you know, not having like there's plans in place for them already. The only thing that we know for sure is the NFL is that there's not going to be any fans.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And like I've said before to you, I mean, the NFL is like a microcosm of the USA. Right now, the United States, it's like the Wild Wild West there. Mm-hmm. You go from one state to another, and they have different rules for different states. You have states such as Texas and Florida that's just rampant with COVID to the point where their hospitals are maxed out. They don't practice social distancing. They don't practice mask wearing. You know, there's just COVID everywhere. And then when you go to other states where, you know, more liberal states, sorry to say, more liberal states, you know, they do mask wearing. They do social distancing. They were shut down for a fixed period of time. Because of this mishmash of just different, you know, different policies for once you pass the state line, that's like potential trouble for somebody to catch COVID. All it's going to take is one person from Miami playing for Miami Dolphins, whether it's a trainer or something, who goes and infects one of the players, and the player goes and infects somebody from, I don't know, the New York Jets, and then that New York Jet person goes and infects his other players and his trainers and so on, and the next thing you know, you have a full-out outbreak. So it's just, like I said, it's crazy to me that these guys don't have any sort of policies, and they're not even talking about what's going to happen once if somebody does get infected. You know, there's no cohesive plan. From what I read, the only thing that they're going to do is a player who's infected with COVID will have to sit out, I think it's 10 days, yeah, and he's going to have to pass two tests within 24 hours. That's basically what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't blame these guys for opting out. They're scared, and I don't blame them. The older you get, the one thing you realize that the older you get, it's less about the money, and it's more about where you are in life. If you have a family, if you have people that you need to support at home, if you have kids, you know, I mean, those are the things that really matter in life. These guys, a lot of these players, and especially the ones that are opting out, they made their money. They've been in the NFL for years. You know, I don't necessarily think a rookie who's just coming in, who's starting his career, is going to opt out because he might be willing to take that chance. But when you start looking at the older players that have more to lose, then yeah, they're going to opt out. And all it's going to take is one great big one little outbreak, and then all of a sudden you're going to see a flood of other players that's going to start opting out as well.
Thing is, NFL is tough, man, because you like the fact that, again, you know, you always got to throw the fact out that these guys don't have guaranteed contracts. Mm-hmm. I think more than anything, that's what kind of makes you have to be in these positions. So, say, I know you're talking from a perspective of, like, veterans and depending on how much money they make. You're right. But, like, if there's certain players that are kind of on the bubble, right? Even if they're, like, a 7-8-year veteran and they're kind of on the bubble, like, they if they opt out, like, that might be it for them. You know what I mean? Like, that might be it as terms of playing football. Like, that might be it. It's over. You know what I mean? Depending on certain guys. Like, that might be it. You know, because the turnover, you know how it is. The turnover ratio in the league is high when it's like you see a player that's, you know, playing 5-6 years. You know, he gets cut. Somebody else picks him up. He might get cut after that second team, and then that's it. Like, what is the average amount of years in the league for players? Like 3 years?
Yeah, well, for running backs, it's about 3 years. For regular players, I think it's like 4 to 5 years, possibly.
Yeah, maybe 4 years.
Maybe but, 4 years. Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like for some of these guys, it's like, yo, if they bank out of this, it's like, shit, that might be it. Like, they may not. And that's the hard thing about having these non-guaranteed contracts. Like, I'm not sure what the protocols is if they're, and I think some of them are getting protected from that. I would believe they would have to be. But I mean, even if you're not, because again, the fact that you can get cut at any time once your guaranteed money runs out and you still got money on that contract, man, like, they're replaceable. Like, the next set of college recruits or prospects are going to be coming into the league this year, or like, you know, like for 2021. And depending on where you are, like, in terms of your status in your career, that, like I said, again, that might be it for you. So some of these guys, I feel like they might be forced to play. Whereas, like, the NBA, you know, a guy like Avery Bradley can say, listen, he knows that he can bank out and, or sorry, like, he can back out, and he knows next year his contract is still going to be protected. Yep. Like, he's like, even if he doesn't take the money, even if he takes the hit, you know, he's still going to, you know, if he wants to play next year, it's not going to be like, well, you sat out this year and, well, too bad. You know what I mean? Like, you're still going to be guaranteed. You're still going to be afforded that freedom to come back. So I think that, to me, like, I just think that part of the fact that contracts aren't guaranteed is you really have to make that harsh decision.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not to say that these guys don't have the pressure to make that decision already, but I just think it's almost twofold, where you gotta really think about, if I don't play, am I gonna have a career to come back to? I don't care what the owners may say if that isn't the case, because the contracts aren't guaranteed. You know, not every player is getting afforded that promise that they can come back.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. I do agree with you on that. I mean, the fact that the NFL does not have guaranteed contracts always blows my mind. Like, you're looking at the most physical sport, where players literally, on any play, they could get injured and end their career. Yet there's no guarantee that they're going to get paid. This blows my mind. When you look at other leagues, when you look at the NFL, the NBA, and you look at, you know, Major League Baseball, and you look at hockey, like, these players are covered. When you get a contract for 5 years, it's a contract of 5 years. If you're injured for 2 years, you still get your money. Mm-hmm. But the NFL, that doesn't happen. So, I mean, you're right. A lot of these players, especially the younger players, I feel like they're more susceptible because they could get cut at any moment. And a lot can happen in one season. If they go and sit out this season because they're afraid of COVID, you never know what's going to happen. They could go and, I don't know, they could go and break their leg playing pickup basketball, or God forbid they get into an accident, and that's literally the end of their career, and that's the end of their earning potential. So what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of players that are playing, yeah, but they don't really have a choice as to whether they can opt out or not, because they don't know if they do opt out, whether they're going to have a job in the following year. Just the whole NFL dynamic is really, like, it's pretty crazy, man. It's really, really crazy. You really have a short time to maximize your potential.
You really
monetarily
do.
Monetarily, that is.
You really do. And then you got to look at the other aspect, too, of with everything that's happening with the anti-black racism stuff. Like, you know, have we really addressed what's going to happen in the NFL? Because, I mean, I'm expecting a whole heap of players Kaepernick in the national anthem. You know, if you want to use his last name as a verb, but that's where I'm kind of seeing that too, where, you know, that's another controversy you're gonna have to deal with too, players kneeling, because, you know, the whole thing of having the week one NFL season, having the lift every voice, the black national anthem being played, you know, as opposed to the national anthem or with the national anthem, I think is like, I feel like that's just giving crumbs. You know what I mean?
It is.
It's like a symbolic gesture of crumbs, like just landing on your plate. Like, hey, you can guys have this. Thank you, guys. We're not going to deal with the issue here, but we're going to play Lift Every Voice and make sure Mahalia Jackson singing the Mahalia Jackson version. You know? I find that's, to me, I think that is hilarious in itself, number one. And then number two, are these guys going to be, what's the word? Are these teams going to have these players' backs when they want to kneel or take a social justice stand? Like, I know some of it was the whole thing of you can put certain decals on your helmet to kind of support like the anti-black racism or what have you, which is fine. But I mean, are these guys now going to have a platform to say what they want to say? Are they is the president going to come back after them again without protection from the owners? Like, what's like? That whole, I think that's another like punch in the face that the NFL's not really dealing with, that it's going to be coming their way too.
Absolutely. I see it more as a marketing ploy, to be honest with you. They had their opportunity when Kaepernick first started kneeling to basically take a stand on that. And what ended up happening? They ended up cowarding before Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump basically took the message and hijacked it. He turned it into something that was completely different than what it was meant for in the first place. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, the NFL is all pro-black. Well, thanks. I suspect that the reason why you are pro-black is because of just the political climate right now, in terms of all the social protesting. And right now, it seems to be almost, sorry to say, but it seems to be cool to be anti-racist, right?
Mm, right.
You know, it's great that, you know, for the first game you're going to change the anthem to I guess the black anthem, so to speak. It's great that you're allowing players to put the names of police victims on the back of their jerseys. I mean, that's all, those things are great, but the fact of the matter is that let's see what really happens, because once Donald Trump and other governors and some of the owners, because some of the owners I'm pretty sure are 100% against it.
Mm-hmm.
Once they start talking out and starts, you know, criticizing the NFL like they did before, let's see what really happens. Let's see if the NFL sticks to its morals, or whether they're just going to, you know, whether they're going to turn tail and run like they did a couple years ago.
Right.
You know? My thought is, a lot of these NFL players and a lot of these NFL owners, they don't want to do this. They don't want this anthem played. They still don't see any problem with any social injustices right now. They don't care. They simply don't care. But what they care about is their money. And right now, it's cool to be pro-black. But like I said before, that could change at any minute. And once they get enough pressure, we'll see what happens. So, we'll see.
In terms of Roger Goodell, you know, like having to say, you know, Black Lives Matter and all this stuff, I'm like, I felt like it was one of the most hollow. I didn't even take it seriously, Roger. Like, I heard it, I just laughed, and I just continued like scrolling through my timeline. I think it was on Twitter. I just continued scrolling through my timeline. Like, I hold no value to anything they say with regards to any of this stuff. So that's why I think that's another shitstorm coming.
Yeah,
coming their way, because you have players and stuff looking at owners like, wow, you guys really aren't going to say anything, which. I mean, I don't know if they're actually really surprised or they're just doing that to, like, kind of put the pressure on the owners. I mean, I hope it's the latter, because I hope they, like, I'd be, like, disappointed if they really felt like, wow, I can't believe these owners aren't saying anything, you know. Mm-hmm. But with that said, like, I feel like that's going to be something where by September, by the first or second week of the season, it's going to be like, okay, like, what the fuck's happening here? You know, there's going to be some sort of a blowback from somebody. And especially, especially the guys on the Cowboys, right? Because Jerry Jones already had the history of saying, well, ain't none of my boys kneeling, you know? So like, all that's going to have to get revisited. And I mean, and he's been, like, quiet as a church mouse, you know, at this point. Like, he hasn't said a word about it. And again, I don't care, because I'm not looking for NFL owners to say anything on these things, because they never do. You know, I think out of, like, all the professional – out of all the owners for professional sports, that's the oldest money. They're the most high snobbery. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Ain't giving two shits about anything that's regarding this happening. You know what I mean? So,
yep.
At least that's the perception in my mind.
Yeah. I agree completely. I mean, you literally have probably around, out of 32 teams, you probably have 25 Trumps in there. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, older white men, old money, you know, billionaires, all of them probably billionaires, most of them billionaires. All of them have old money, you know, inherited, passed down from generation to generation. And they all have similar mindsets. At the end of the day, all they care about is their money. And unfortunately, I mean, there's a few of them that might speak up. There's a few coaches that might speak up. But aside from that, you know, they don't really have much to say, nothing positive to say anyways. By the second or third week, what I think is going to happen is, yeah, there's going to be some players that are still kneeling. And they're going to start complaining because they're going to say, well, we gave you guys the anthem. We let you guys play the anthem. We let you guys put the names of the victims on the back of your jerseys. We've tried to appease you as much as possible, so why are you kneeling? That's basically what I think is going to happen eventually.
We gave you the Mahalia Jackson remix. I don't understand.
Exactly. We gave you these crumbs. We don't understand why you're still starving. I don't get it. And I don't get why these guys are still protesting. I don't understand.
And I think, too, like a prime example of that is watching the situation, you know, what's happening in Washington in terms of Washington having to change their name. Like, that to me was like the quintessential example of the stubbornness of an NFL owner. Because you have Daniel Snyder, who, you know, that team wasn't passed down to him. He bought that team in, I think, like 1999 or early 2000s. He bought the team from, I forgot the name of the owner. But that team wasn't passed down from generation to generation where, you know, like the name meant something to that family, even though the name was, you know, a racial slur to Native Americans, right? Or Native Indians. Yep. So you're looking from that aspect of, okay, this guy is not wanting to change the name. He had so many years to change his name. It's been, honestly, this has been on his plate for about 10 years. And he stubbornly was not listening to anything anybody said regarding this topic at all. Didn't matter how much people, the biggest thing I saw them do was they'll float out a survey and say, well, these Native Indians on the survey of like 100 people said that they're okay with the name. So, you know, so because of that, we're not going to change anything. Like, to me, it was the easiest thing to do. Like, just, you know what? You know, sometimes in life, like, you gotta jump out ahead before the thing gets to you. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta jump out ahead first. Not, you know, or the boxing analogy. Sometimes you gotta shoot first. You gotta punch first before that controversy comes and lands on your doorstep. And the NFL is, especially since Goodell's been in office, they've always found a way to hit last. They never react first. So, like, that to me, that was a perfect opportunity. You're a new owner. You've been there for 10 years, whatever, or 5 to 10 years to start. You're getting rumblings that this name, even though it has a rich history in D.C., it's a negative, a really negative connotation on a race, on a certain color of creed or people. You have an opportunity now to change it to whatever you want. You can keep the same colors. You know what I mean? Right. But, like, just change the name and the logo to something else. You know, like, you had so much opportunities to do that. Even during this time, they were like, oh, well, you know what? Because of this, you know, prior to the Black Lives Matter movement and stuff that's going on, you know, we were kind of thinking about changing the name and doing all this stuff. And, you know, and Roger, you know, he wasn't going to do shit.
Absolutely not.
It's only because I always say, like, you know, at some point in history, you want to be on the right side of history when it comes to these things. And right. You're looking at FedEx, who wants to pull their name, other sponsors that want to pull their name, because they want to, when they look back on history, they want to be seen as, hey, we're doing the right thing here. Even though they were funding the stadium for, you know, FedEx Field for like 10, 15 years themselves, you know, so, you know, they kind of knew what was going on too. But whatever, at least they made that first, they threw that first arrow saying, change his name or we're pulling all our sponsorship from your team.
And that's
the only thing that affects these guys, is that affects these owners, is you got to hit them in their pocket. You know what
100%.
I mean?
Yep.
That's the only language they understand in this case. That was it. That's the only thing they understand.
Oh, for sure. Oh, I agree completely. I agree completely. FedEx has the rights to the naming rights for their stadium, for FedEx Stadium, for 20 years. They paid probably around over $200 million for those rights. And you can't, nobody can't tell me that the reason why Washington decided to change his name wasn't because FedEx basically sent them a letter saying, look, you guys need to change your name. And if you don't, we're going to pull out and you're going to lose over $200 million or whatever is left over of that contract. That's the only reason why they changed it. That's it. They didn't change it because they wanted to be that they wanted to be socially conscious. They don't care. They don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. They've had this name for how many years now? They don't care about that. What they care about is money. And when something hits their pocketbook, that's what they care about. So, I mean, yeah, great. Now they're called, what, Washington, the Washington Football Club?
Washington Football Team.
That's great. Good for them. Like, that's fantastic. But, I mean, realistically, they're not really doing anything to help the movement. You know, because they really didn't want to do this in the first place.
Then, to me, this is a prime example as to why I believe that these owners aren't going to really do anything until the shit hits the fan for them. They, like, so even with this whole situation of dealing with, you know, protecting the players from the coronavirus, they're not going to care until an outbreak happens or the absolute worst case scenario, somebody dies. You know what I mean? Somebody catches it and dies. And then now they're going to be like, holy shit, well, we should have put things. Like, if that happens, it's going to be a fucking catastrophe.
Oh, my God. It will be such a shitstorm.
I don't even want to put that in the air, but I'm like, but that would be like the worst catastrophe that you can even imagine. And all because they had nothing in place to protect these guys.
Absolutely, 100%. All it takes is for one person, just one NFL player. I don't care if it's a rookie. I don't care if it's somebody in the training squad. I don't care if it's somebody in the practice squad. It doesn't matter. Somebody gets sick, gets put on a ventilator, or passes away, and everything is just going to turn into a massive shitstorm. Yeah. Like right now, if I was one of the owners of the NFL, I would be scared as hell. I'd be looking at my roster every day trying to figure out, okay, well, what's this person doing? Is this person leaving the complex? What state do they live in? Where are they going to? Like, I would be freaking out. Because when you look at, especially when you look at the bigger names, like you look at the Tom Brady's, the Drew Brees's, you know, guys who are a little bit older, guys that are established, you know, they've made their money, they have families. If one of them opts out, like one of those big stars opt out, then it's just going to open up a floodstorm of just all the rest of these older players, these star players opting out. And then the NFL is not going to make any money. I'm sorry. People are not going to pay to see the third, fourth string quarterback playing for the Patriots or playing for the Bucks or playing for the Steelers or whichever team it is. So, I mean, the NFL has a lot to lose right now. So they better smarten up and get with the program. Start protecting their players. They need to. They have to.
And it lends to the mentality of the warrior mentality of football players, right? Because that's the whole thing, right? They play through anything, right? Like that's right. And you play football before, you know. Like it's you're playing through anything. You're gonna play through a broken leg. You're gonna play if you're sick. Yep. What do you mean you're sick?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So you're still gonna strap up, right? Like that's. Like nothing is stopping you from playing the game. So like that. So it kind of lends to that mentality too. So like I said, I don't want to put out in the air that like somebody will have to pass away. But like, even if somebody, as you said, gets put on a ventilator, and even if they still make it, but they get put on a ventilator, that's gonna be catastrophic. Like for the league. Like I said, just because they had nothing in place.
Yep.
And I don't know what's gonna happen because again, like you're flying, like the 49ers, I don't know, I don't have their schedule in front of me right now. Actually, let me pull up the schedule while I'm talking to you before you wrap up. But, like, you know, they're going to be flying to Seattle. They're flying to Arizona. They're flying to L.A., right? Like, there's so much places that they're going to be going to where, like, how do you account for that in each place, in each state? Like, you can't account for it.
No, you can't. You can't possibly.
You can't account for it. Like I'm looking at their schedule right now. So, you know, they have a home game in Arizona. This is just the 49ers. I'm just focusing on them because they're my team. But week two and week three, they're in New York. You know, week seven, they're in New Orleans. They're in Boston. They're in Seattle for week eight. They're in Louisiana in New Orleans for week 10. So like they're traveling all over the place. You know, for the most part. Like weeks 2 and 3, they're gonna be in New York City. Like I mean, I guess they're gonna have to stay there for 2 weeks, but are they gonna be put in a bubble situation during that time period? You know what I mean? Where they can't leave the hotel? Because that, to me, that's the only thing that they could do at this point. It's like whatever team comes into the city, they literally cannot leave and go anywhere unless it's for the either to go to the stadium to go play or to go back to the airport to fly out of the city. Like to me, that's the only thing they can do at this point.
Yep, I agree completely. And some of these spots that they're going are real hotbeds for COVID. Mm-hmm. That's another problem in itself. You know, when they go to Arizona, when they go to certain places in New York, when they go to, I don't know, if they play Dallas or Houston or any one of these NFC teams, like NFC/AFC teams, it literally could differ from week to week where they're going and where they're playing. So they've got to be really, really careful. You know, when they're going to Dallas, you guys have to stay in the hotel. You can't move. You can't leave the hotel. And even in the hotel, like, I don't even think a lot of places in Texas in particular, I don't even think they have social distancing. I don't think they have mask laws or mask rules. So even when they're in the hotel, they're probably going to have to isolate themselves away from everybody else. Mm-hmm. There's just so much potential for something to go wrong. It's not a matter of if something's going to happen. It's a matter of when something's going to happen. And when it does, how are they going to react to it? What is the NFL going to do? Because as we've seen before, the NFL bows down to social pressure.
Yeah.
And all it takes is one person to get sick, and then articles start going out about how the NFL didn't protect their players, and they're not doing right by their players, and all of a sudden it just opens up the floodgates to negative press. And the NFL does not deal well with negative press. They don't.
Not at all. So with that said now, how long do you think... Well, first of all, do you think the season is going all the way through?
I don't think so. I give it... Sorry to say, but I give it about 2 to 3 weeks.
Really,
eh? If they have a situation like, for instance, the Marlins, right? 10 players, just like that, just come down with COVID. If they have a situation like that, that automatically means that Miami, most likely, you know, there's potential for half the team or a quarter of the team or whatever is infected with COVID. That's possible that the trainers and everybody gets COVID as well. Like that's a dangerous situation. I don't think it's like the MLB, whereas they have actual rules to isolate them and have actual doctors come in and test them and make sure that they're asymptomatic. It's not like that in the NFL. All it takes is for a few players to get sick, and then all of a sudden you're going to have teams forfeit games. And once that starts happening, it's just going to be a complete disaster. People are going to be looking at the NFL, and they're going to be like, well, why did you guys start back in the first place? You knew there was potential for these bad things to happen, yet, you know, obviously, you just care about the money. You don't give a shit about the players.
Or shorten the season. You know what I mean? Like, maybe start in October and try to get something more in place first. You know, because the NFLPA is already saying, like, some of these players are saying, like, if there's nothing in place, we're not playing.
Exactly.
Like I said, again, there's just so much directions where this thing can fall into the lava pit. that at this stage that I'm like... You know, you were saying this yesterday. It's like you're kind of like, is everybody going to be safe through this process? Yes. Okay. Can you pass the popcorn, please?
Yeah, exactly.
Some butter on mine, because like that's how you feel. Like you just feel like you're about to watch a disaster happen. Like
100%.
It's like, what was that movie? 2012 or like, like that? It's gonna be like that. It's gonna be like one of those disaster. You know, like something you go see at the box office.
Yep. And even if they do, let's say they do make it to 10 games, 10 to 12 games, right? If teams aren't in the playoffs or they don't have the potential of being in the playoffs, you think those veteran players are still going to play? A lot of them are going to be like, well, why am I playing? We're not making the playoffs. It's not like we're going to win the Super Bowl or anything. They're going to start saying, well, I'm going to sit because the possibility of getting COVID is not worth them actually playing out a few extra games just so they could play.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so many, like, there's so many different facets of this that I don't know if the NFL hasn't thought about, or like it just blows my mind. Like, there's so many different things that you got to think about that goes into it. But hey, Yeah, it's like you said, man. It's like watching a disaster. It's like watching a disaster movie where it's kind of like you start the movie, you know what the movie's about, you know what the name of the movie is, and you're just kind of watching. You're expecting bad things to happen. Yeah, it hasn't happened yet, but you're kind of watching and you're waiting. You're like, okay, well, when's it going to happen? That's how I feel like with the NFL right now.
Yeah, we're about 20 minutes into this movie right now. We're about
we
just got past the credits. You know, like they're just setting up the storyline. That's where we kind of are right now.
In this absolutely
movie. But the sad thing is there's not going to be credits at the end of the movie where we get up and just walk away. Well, we'll get up and walk away as fans, but you know, the players are going to have that's a whole different thing.
Yep.
It's a whole different thing for them.
Yep, I agree. I agree completely, man. You know, we're the people sitting in the restaurants, having a good time, you know, drinking a beer, watching the game. Like, everything's really normal right now. It's fine. They haven't really started training camp. They haven't really started doing any sort of training. You know, they took away the preseason games. You know, it's great and all. That's fantastic. But eventually, people are going to have to start having contact with each other. They're going to have to start hitting each other. They're going to have to start touching each other. And then let's see what's going to happen. You know, it's like the calm before the storm.
Yep, totally agree. Thank you all for listening to the latest episode of the AV Podcast. I appreciate you for tuning in as always. Special shout out goes out to Randall Walter and Roger Callender for hopping on the AV today to discuss some of the NBA awards and the potential dysfunctional disaster that the NFL may have coming its way. Please remember that this Sunday, August 2nd, myself and Chris Nice present to you the annual Sunday afternoon Carnival Barbecue Party, the Zoom edition. Please reach out to me, DM me on Facebook at CalC, on Instagram at CalCium, that's CalC with the E-M at the end, as well as South Shore Ave on my Instagram as well for the Zoom link. We know Caravan is gone for 2020, and if you're living in Toronto, at least from what the meteorologist is saying, it's going to rain most of Sunday, if not all of Sunday. But we want to stay connected with you, so please tune in. Bring your flag, your rag, your drinks. I mean, we're all going to be home, right? And let's have some fun. It all starts at 4 p.m. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of my shows from South Shore Ave Radio. And to catch up on my entire catalog of podcast shows, you want to dive deep into my catalog, right? Right? Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Randall Walter and Roger Callender, this is Cal C. And you just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until next time, folks, peace. We out. And we'll see you Sunday at 4 at the Carnival Rooftop Barbecue Party on Zoom. All right? Peace.